Good morning. It's 11 minutes before the hour. You're listening to NPR's Morning Edition over Raven Radio, KCAW in Sitka, where it is 31 degrees, overcast, and intermittent snowfall this morning. Today is Tuesday, March 6, 2012. I'm Robert Woolsey with Raven News. The Sitka Assembly will meet tonight to complete the agenda it was unable to finish last week. When the Assembly reconvenes at 6 p.m. inside Harrigan Centennial Hall, it's scheduled to discuss forward funding the Sitka School District and possible budget cuts. The two conversations were originally scheduled for February 28th, but the Assembly ran out of time to conduct its business before hitting a mandatory adjournment deadline. There are no set plans on the table tonight, just rough ideas. The first, dealing with school funding, was originally suggested by Assemblymember Tor Christensen at a work session with the school board. He proposed that the city might be able to pledge money to the cash-strapped school system, but not actually pay it unless it was needed later in the year. The district is planning for a tight budget year, but there are a lot of unknown factors that could make the numbers turn out better than expected. The second topic of conversation is on whether to ask the city administrator to come up with a list of budget cut options. Assembly members have said their budget discussions might be more fruitful if they knew where they could reasonably cut money. But others, including Mayor Cheryl Westover, have expressed concern that asking for a list of options is like asking the administrator to write the budget early. The assembly meeting resumes at 6 p.m. tonight. This is the continuation of a meeting and not originally on the schedule, so Raven Radio will not provide live coverage. You can learn more about tonight's assembly issues during Raven News tomorrow. Sport fishermen and chum trollers have reached a compromise in a salmon allocation battle in northern southeast. Coast Alaska's Ed Schoenfeld reports from the State Board of Fisheries meeting in Ketchikan.
Targeted chum salmon trolling is relatively new in southeast.
It's only in the last 20 years, but particularly in the last four or five, that trollers have really been able to successfully target hatchery chum.
Eric Jordan represented the Chum Trollers Association at the Ketchikan Board of Fisheries meeting. He said the Icy Strait and North Chatham Strait fisheries were worth about $1 million to trollers last year. They wanted the fishery to grow, so they put a pair of proposals before the fisheries board. One expanded spring harvest areas in Icy and Chatham Straits. The other added a summer troll area in Upper Stevens Passage, which is much closer to Juneau. That didn't go over well with Capital City anglers. Larry Edfeld of Juneau-based Territorial Sportsman says the plans encroached on popular fishing areas.
We wanted to protect King and Coho access, and we were afraid that if you put 150 trollers into the north end of the Juneau area, that a lot of juvenile kings, feeder kings, and cohos would be caught in addition to a lot of chums.
Rather than butt heads before the board, they decided to work together on a compromise. The commercial group gave up much of what it wanted, while the sportsmen dropped objections to the remaining fishing grounds. Jordan said it was a good deal for chum trollers.
We ended up with less area and less time than we wanted in the new area on the Admiralty Shore, where we figure we'll have an even higher percentage of hatchery fish.
He said the compromise allows trollers to target hatchery chums and hatchery kings, switching from one to the other as caps are reached. Edfeld said the sportsmen are satisfied because they were able to keep trollers out of popular fishing areas near the northern part of Juneau.
They agreed to not only a reduced area, but a four-day-a-week fishery that did not include Friday, Saturday, Sunday.
The measure has a sunset clause, so the expansion will come back before the fisheries board in 3 years. And there's more to the agreement.
The chum trollers have agreed to not try to expand that fishery without gaining the consensus of the Juneau sport fishermen and charter fishermen, as well as the gill netters.
The compromise is one of a number that developed during or leading up to the fisheries board meeting. Jordan said that's becoming more common. He says it's good for Alaska's fisheries.
I think if the interest groups will get together and solve their own problems, as much as they have to compromise, they usually end up with a better deal than if the seven dark angels of the Board of Fisheries have to swoop in and decide it for you.
He credits the board, particularly Chairman Carl Johnstone, for encouraging negotiations. Johnstone says he puts the proposals with the most impact before the whole board rather than running them through a committee. He said that seems to quell some of the controversy.
And the wind kind of goes out because everybody has pretty much decided one way or the other what's happened. And then the rest of the proposals are available and the people seem to be more conciliatory.
Gillnetters, Fish and Game Department staff, and a charter group joined the Chum Trollers and the Sportsmen in drafting this particular compromise. Their measure passed the board on a unanimous vote. This is Ed Schoenfeld in Ketchikan.
You can see what else the Board of Fisheries passed or rejected through a link posted with this report on our website, kcaw.org. And today is Raven Radio's birthday, the 30th anniversary of the start of regular daily broadcasts. We celebrated our sign-on back on the 19th of February when Marika Partridge briefly put the station on the air to lend some weight to KCAW's pending request from the legislature. With $53,000 in state funding hanging in the balance, it might have been our first unofficial on-air fund drive. Here's what that broadcast sounded like.
This is Raven Radio, KCAW in Sitka, partially funded by the community of Sitka as well as the Alaska Public Broadcasting Commission, signing on the air. I am Marika Partridge, and it brings me humongous pleasure to welcome all of you who happen to be listening to this, our very first historical broadcast. During the next couple of weeks, we're going to be on the air in the evenings, beginning at 5, and as soon as we get the bugs worked out of our system, we're going to sign on for our full broadcast day, and we'll be sure to let you know all about that.
And that full broadcast day eventually came on March 6, 1982, when those bugs would be worked out. And Raven Radio began a broadcasting routine that sounds pretty much like it sounds now. Marika Partridge, by the way, would later go on to work as the director of All Things Considered, NPR's flagship evening news magazine. Partridge was an emigre from KTOO in Juneau. So were general manager Rich McClear and his wife Susie, who previously had helped found an early community radio station in northern Minnesota. McClear turned down an offer from a national media outfit in Washington, D.C. to work in community broadcasting in Alaska. He has no regrets.
I think the media scene is so debased in the United States, really. I mean, you look at the quality of television news, it's terrible. NPR is one shining beacon of news, and some papers like the New York Times. And when you look at community media, I still think that's the future. Maybe I was right 35 years ago.
McClear says that early in the movement, there was a widespread belief that community radio stations would revolutionize communication. He says he and other station pioneers envisioned co-equal status for community, public, and commercial broadcasters. That never happened, but McClear is content nonetheless.
I look at Raven Radio. I look at K2. I think, you know, these are where things are happening. This is where good news reporting is happening. The Coast Alaska stations are really in touch with their communities. I listen to, you know, the sports show on Raven Radio on Sunday night. I listen to the library show. I listen to the storytelling shows. I think, wow, this station is really still doing what we wanted it to do, and that's exciting.
The idea for Raven Radio began with Todd Davis in 1978. He organized KCAW's first local board long before there was a station. Several months later, Davis died in a climbing accident, but his idea didn't. Susie McClear says she and Rich first saw Sitka on a 24-hour layover at about that time. She says she believes in love at first sight. She also believes community broadcasting has made a permanent imprint on the region.
Each community has changed a lot in 30 years, some for the better, some not so. The stations that have actually been adopted by their community, that truly do have their roots in the community, are doing programming that I'm not as excited about because it's programs for the 20-year-olds and the 30-year-olds, and I'm not there anymore. So I don't like it, but I really like it because that's where it needs to be.
Since leaving Raven Radio in 1993, both McClears have continued to work on developing community radio, mostly in post-Soviet Eastern Europe and the Balkans. They were among the first of the thousands of people who have listened to the station's signal online and followed our news stories daily on Facebook and the web. McClear says he's not surprised that Raven Radio has cultivated a large audience outside of Sitka.
Community radio is the best medium, I think, to integrate with new media, with social media, because community radio started as social media. It started as a group of amateurs, amateur from the word of Amoama, you know, I love radio. I love my community. And you take that with community radio and mix it with social media. Holy cow, we could really do something here. So I'm really excited.
Rich and Susie McClear will be in Sitka more often nowadays. They've decided to limit their overseas work to shorter visits in the developing world. They both have plans to be in town when Raven Radio celebrates its 30th birthday in style this summer with a 5-day reunion and party from June 30th to July 4th. For extended audio with Rich and Susie McClear as they discuss the early years at Raven Radio, visit our website, kcaw.org, later this morning. A federal court judge has ordered the National Marine Fisheries Service to perform additional environmental work for its rules that protect endangered stellar sea lions in the western Aleutian Islands. The order by District Court Judge Tim Burgess follows his ruling in January that the agency in general followed proper procedures as it restricted commercial fishing of Atka mackerel and Pacific cod. The state of Alaska and two fishing groups challenged the restrictions. Burgess's order yesterday keeps restrictions in place but requires an environmental impact statement with the chance for public comment rather than the less thorough environmental assessment. The statement must be completed by March 2014. And musher Ali Zirkel has taken an early lead in the Iditarod Trail sled dog race, leaving Roan checkpoint after a stop of just 9 minutes. By last evening, 9 mushers had reached Roan, including defending champion John Baker. Zone weather forecast today for Sitka and PA calls for snow this morning, then rain in the afternoon, snow accumulation around 2 inches, highs around 39, southwest winds 15 to 25 miles per hour, decreasing this afternoon. This is KCAW in Sitka.